If we can call this budget meeting to order, this is the FY '16 budget hearing for the Department of Land Use. Currently, we might as well start, I really don't anticipate a quorum, although that would be nice if it does happen. Currently, present is councilpersons Tackett, Weiner, Diller, Retta, and Councilman Smiley, co-chair of finance. I have been advised that Councilman Cartier, Council President Bullock, Councilman Street, and Councilman Powers will be absent. Councilman Bell is a possible attendee, but he's not sure whether he will be able to make it or not.
So let's get him reserved your spot in case.
And Councilman Bell has made it, so takes care of that.
There it is.
Councilman Bell has joined us.
On the quorum?
Janet is here.
I know there are others here, but let's go ahead and.
Yeah.
Here comes Penrose.
We're going.
Well, Janet's here.
Councilman Hollins is also here.
Motion to approve.
There's a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
There's a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that's been cleaned up. Now if we can, please identify yourself for the record and begin.
Eileen Fogarty, Land Use General Manager. Good afternoon, delighted to be here, and I will hopefully be very brief, but I'll look up at the chair to see if I'm being not brief enough. Get confused. A very quick overview of our budget. Good news, our revenues, we expect an 8% increase. Our expenses, a slight decrease, about $77,000. And this past year, despite the challenges of the retirements and the vacancies, we've had tremendous progress in terms of rebuilding both the professionalism, the expertise, and the capacity you have in place as the council goes into the next fiscal year. A land use action plan, which is in the back of your budget book.
Excuse me a second. Let the record show that Councilwoman Kilpatrick has joined us. Please continue, my apologies.
Thank you. Everything that you will hear that we've identified this past year or in this forthcoming year all reflect that action strategy, and that action strategy should reflect the council's goals and objectives. As you decide to modify those goals and objectives, council can modify that action strategy, because it's basically the direction for the department. The streamlining efforts, the revitalization efforts, economic development and transportation all have specific actions under that strategy that we either have completed or will be completing. It is also the, we've handed out once before, but wanting to make sure you have enough of our studies. This is the operational and efficiency study, which is in the process of being implemented. Much of it has already been implemented. It's the basis for restructuring the permitting, inspection, enforcement processes, instituting teams, breaking down silos. Somebody said that to me today. I like that. The teams between code, permitting, customer service, and of course Project Docs is well underway. As we continue into 2016, the restructuring will be in place and the process changes will be taking place. The major streamlining, there will be a development facilitator put in place, and the rest of the streamlining details should be prepared by the, or will be prepared by the UDC consultants, so that they will be coming to you for a text amendment.
Councilman Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just explain the development streamliner? Is that a person or a process?
There are two things. The development streamlining is a process, and the process involves everything from what we call the conceptual review, which is an opportunity for community to come in early, but it's been a great opportunity for all of us to see projects at the very beginning. There's a development review committee. There is a development facilitator. We have had someone acting in that capacity who has been doing this for the large-scale projects, and the goal would be to expand it for a broader range of projects. The streamlining also includes a variety of specific actions for minor plans to deal with amendments that require people now to go through a fairly lengthy process just to change easements or change lot lines. All of the actions that were identified by the council and the business, civic, as well as development community have been, are either in place or are being put in place. So that's the streamlining. The facilitator is a person. Good question. Thank you. I didn't pay him to ask that. So as you look through the book, on page one, you'll see the actual number of employees, which as of today is 98. Page two, the budgeted, which remains the same at 118. Page three, you see our expenses budget to budget, and there will be a slight decrease in the budget of $76,486. The largest reason for the decrease is professional services has gone from $400,000 to $250,000, so there's a reduction of $150,000. On page four, we have our revenues. There is budget to budget an 8% increase in revenues, and that 8% includes fee increases of $461,000 roughly, and it includes a volume increase of about $430,000. That's
me,
that's reflected.
Ms. Fogarty, if I may, I'm going to try this, and no disrespect to you, but you're leaving, so I don't know who in the room can give us assurances or if there are any. You know, we're looking at maintaining, you know, the level of staffing request at 118. But we haven't been there, as far as you know. Is there an anticipation of filling these positions in code enforcement, in land use, and you know, are they moving forward? I know you and I had a brief discussion a month or so ago on this, but what's your perception?
So,
as you head
what
off?
I would say, and the council knows, it was a painful kind of July, August through January, in that particularly in planning and engineering, we were between 40 and 50% vacancies at times. We started to get positions filled. The first one was January 15th. We have had 10 positions filled since January 15th. Even though we have more vacancies, the filling of those 10 positions has been, it's just made all the difference in the world. We had brought in temporary people because we did not have staff to even cover the front counter or to answer the phones. Those positions, it's my understanding, the temporary positions are being filled by permanent positions. Is that correct?
They will be here.
Yes, and we have, those are being filled. So of the remaining positions, I did get approval last Friday from the CAO to move forward on several of them. There are a couple of them that we will probably hold back on for a few months, but several of the ones that were that are critical, we did get approval Friday to move forward.
Right. It's needless to say, I don't believe I'm the only council member that has concerns that, you know, we as council approve legislation requiring vacant property registrations, rental property registrations, and the amount of vacant properties increases, which means, you know, the code calls, the customer calls are all increasing. At the same time, the staffing's not going up. I mean, we've approved it, it's funded, but the personnel aren't being put there, and I'm afraid we're going backwards. So, I mean, I know you were trying, and I just hope that movement will continue as you depart.
It certainly, in the fall, was a tremendous challenge in that our workload was increasing separate from the council planning initiatives, and in addition, the actual workload. I will say the addition of the 10 staff has made a huge difference, but there are probably another, and there, many of them are in code, permitting, licensing, and engineering, and I think two in planning. There are probably another 10 positions that need to be filled in the next couple of months.
Okay.
And I made a note of that to share with the
Councilman
County Exec and CAO.
Thank you, Councilman Taggart.
I thought she was going to say share with us, and I was going to say, well, hold off for a minute. But, you know, Ms. Fogarty, me and you have had discussions, and I've sent a few emails about the void that we have seemed to have created as far as historic preservation and planning, you know, with Newcastle County, with the loss of the dedicated planner we had at that time, Christine Quinn, that has just never been filled, and it's just kind of been, you know, added to, you know, another employee or employees as an addition to. And I think the council's been very vocal, especially with a lot of our legislation and things that we have done here, that historic preservation is extremely important to us. And, you know, as we look at the overlays that we have in the hometowns and stuff like that, as you're looking at that, you know, obviously the top layer of that is historic preservation for the whole county. And it's something that we really need to look at. And I hope that's one of the positions that you've just got approval to replace. You know, and I have broached that with the county executive, too, about, you know, my feelings on that position and, you know, at least getting it restored and all. So I hope that's something that we're all working towards.
We have two planning positions that we have approval for. On the initial list, even though we looked for it, we did not, I think there was one person who had some historic preservation background. What would be prudent is for us to re-advertise and see if we can't get people with the historic preservation background. So we have the positions in the existing list. There is not depth of knowledge. How's that?
So it's one of the positions you're looking to fill, but it's not one on your immediate radar.
No, it's one of the positions we are looking to fill. What I'm saying is that with the existing list, which is good until next November, there is not the, even though we had advertised for it, there is not the depth of expertise. But that doesn't mean that there can't be some other ways to try and address that.
Well,
for example, if we filled that position and relieved the current historic preservation planner of some of that person's responsibilities, we would be able, that person would be able to devote more time to historic preservation.
Who's our current historic?
Valerie.
She's actually, that's her position?
She has background in it. We had been through the for about 9 months, so short, that she still staffs the board, but we have many other demands on her.
Okay.
That's being relieved a little bit now.
I didn't realize that was her actual title. So. And Penrose has said it most elegantly in the past over my 11 years here, but, you know, given any time there's a situation, you know, people most knowledgeable in that, you know, are going to emerge. Like Penrose has just asked the community, anytime we have a rezoning, I mean, they become, you know, the most knowledgeable people ever. You know, I have a T-shirt that says, "I don't need Google. My teenager knows everything."
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we just have to make sure we have this position in place. That way, we're preempting, you know, what we have to go out there and deal with on the front line. So,
Mr. Bell,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess still a little confused on the numbers of people that we actually have. When we look at this and it says 95 actual, and we're budgeted for 118, and then you're referring to 10 hired since the beginning of the year.
We also had attrition. We had retirements.
Okay.
So that's absolutely.
So are we 23 down at this point?
Soon.
Or are we 13 down?
We're down 20 as of today.
So okay, 20.
At 331.
Okay. Yeah, I would have to echo the concerns by the chair, and that is that, you know, for positions to be approved and funded in the budget, for a department with the importance that land use carries in this county, and extremely significant to the county's future. I don't see how our land use department can operate with 20, 23 positions down. And I think that if they're funded, they need to be filled. So, I mean, it just, you know, it's certainly a credit in a lot of cases to our employees, because I think they always step up. They're willing to take on additional responsibilities, but at the end of the day, after a while, something has to suffer. The employees suffer, our work quality or product end result suffers. So I think that if we have 20 positions that aren't filled, we should be, I think, kept apprised as to when those positions will be filled. What's the timetable?
I concur with that. And if council just looks on page 32 of the budget book.
On this topic, okay, Mr. Hollins, there we go. And then Mr. Wasserbach.
Yes, I feel that enough has been said about the vacancies here, but I just want to add my comments as well, because I think the council members that have spoken are right on point. To be 30 positions down, it's just not acceptable. They're in the budget. This is one of the departments that's on the front line of quality of life issues. We get as many calls about these kind of issues as any other. And I know that we don't talk enough about the vacancies in land use. If it were public safety, I think we would hear about it every single meeting. If it was community services, perhaps we would hear about it every single meeting. But we tend to just kind of look the other way and allow this to happen when it should not be happening, with the critical work that has been performed by this department. So I think it's going to behoove us and the chairs of land use to make certain that we keep repeating ourselves at subsequent land use committee meetings to let the administration know that we're very serious about these vacancies and that we desire these vacancies to be filled. We're not removing them from the budget. They're in the budget. They are funded, and they should be filled. I mean, there's just no excuse for this. So I agree with the comments that have been made by the council members.
And I don't want to go off topic. I'm just going to say that this just adds to my concern when fiscal notes for changes in job classification say we're getting the funds from other departments. You know, I want to just let it sit there in case we need a change in another department. We need the people. Mr. Wasserbach, you got a question?
Yeah, Wasserbach, County Auditor. Eileen, I hate to stay on the same topic, but since the FY15 approved budget on page 3 was $12.8 million, do you have any idea, or maybe I should be asking this to Russ, do you have any idea what the projected actual is for FY2015? Because I presume if we have 20, 23 vacancies, then the projected actual must be a lot less than what the budget was.
Yeah. At the end of March, our latest projection was year-end estimate savings of over $1 million.
Okay. Thank you. Much of that was salary savings.
Strictly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we're going to hang here for a minute. Councilman Redden and Councilman Patrick.
Thank you. Eileen, in the past, we've talked about engineers, filling the engineer slots and the codes and all that. Now, with the 20 vacancies that we had, I mean, we had some vacancies in special services, and they were funded, never filled. And we were short of personnel over there going out doing certain things. And I've asked and asked and asked. Now, are you going to, or the department's going to, go ahead with try and fill these so we can actually come up to snuff of where we should be? I mean, or are we going to have to wait and find out what the administration wants to do?
Well, let me say first of all...
Because it's actually funded.
That this department made... an incredible effort to get these positions filled this past year. I probably spent 30-35% of my time focused on just that in order to get the positions filled, which is why finally in January, February, and March we had some of the things filled. With respect to the engineers we just hired, we were down either 40-45% with engineering, which was a real burden. We just hired two entry-level engineers. We've put in place in the budget a career ladder to increase both the education and the span of responsibility of the engineers. So a focus has been on engineering.
Councilwoman Kopeck.
Thank you. Previously, we talked about $800,000 that you had said was there for studies, and that $800,000 had been taken back.
It was salary savings. We have the study money, and most of that has been distributed. There's a little bit more that is going to be distributed in the next week or so to the UDC consultants. But the issue was that because we had the significant salary savings, it was our intention to, because we didn't have the staffing capacity, to come to council and take a little bit of that and use that for a couple of the studies. But that, so it was the salary savings money that, and perhaps the, Mike would want to address that, that went back into the central, the general fund.
So the $800,000 that you were planning on for studies is not back?
No, but that, to be clear, what happened as the vacancies increased, that's where that money came from. We always knew there would be a certain amount of money there because we knew it would take some time to fill vacancies. We would have to get Pipe Creek fully funded and 273 Newark underway. We would have probably come to council for about 350 out of that money because that would be what we could handle capacity-wise. So it was not planning consultant money. It was salary savings money.
And I guess my problem goes back to pretty much what everybody else was saying, that we feel that in some instances we are not getting services as quickly as we should in places like inspections, which I get complaints about periodically, that people in construction projects, in-home projects, renovations, aren't getting the inspectors out there as fast as they can. And my concern is that, is somebody along the way saying purposely that we are not going to fill these positions so that we have extra money to throw back in the general fund and not even keep within the department? So I think that kind of goes along with what you're saying. It's very hard for me to think that this is a fairly balanced budget when you start seeing the games that are being played with the money internally, that we're suffering personnel-wise, which then comes down to constituent services in order to fund something that that money was not originally intended for.
It's an observation.
And I had just, as we leave that topic, there was a chart on page 32 that reflects the revenue per staff, and that number of 36% was the increase since 2012 because of the increased volume per staff. Our most recent numbers as of the end of the month have brought that down to, instead of a 36% increase per staff, to a 26%. So that really is an indicator of volume and vacancy. Page five. In the book is the non-discretionary funds. 94% of our budget is non-discretionary. Page 6 is the number of budgeted positions. And again, if as of the 31st of March, we had 98 of those filled. Again, we got 10 filled, and then we had a couple of retirements. Page 7 is the diversity. We remain with 18 minority employees. We hired one and one retired. But I think of note, which the chart doesn't actually show, is there have been three minorities whose promotions have been completed, and there is another one underway. So we have four minority promotions in addition to above and beyond what has taken place in the past. Page 8 is the total difference in the budget, and probably the easiest way to look at that is the $76,486 decrease. Just to move to page 9, which has the specifics. And what you'll see is that salaries, savings, and benefit increases offset each other. Materials and supplies, needing the code book as well as the printing cartridges, that is a slight increase. Contractual services, a decrease of $150,000 in the zoning code, but then things like bank fees on increased customer credit cards, countywide grant writing, those things were increases. So the bottom line is we have a decrease in contractual services of $118,000. And then the intergovernmental cost, IS, GIS, and the fleet amount to about $1 million.
I have a question, and then I'll give the councilman to Patrick. And I apologize, I wasn't here last week, but I did listen to the recording, and that prompted me to go back and look at some other things. And I apologize that you're the one I'm going to grab with this, but under contractual services, the increase of $12,000 for countywide grant writing, that seems to be an anomaly in the budgets. Is this part of a larger cost to
the... let me explain, and Mike, well, please jump in.
Let me ask, I have three questions. Is it part of a larger cost for grant writing? What would be the total of that cost? What entity is receiving those funds? And if this is a repeat, what fruit has been borne since contract?
I think I will say it is part of a larger cost. My understanding is that the grant writers have focused on public safety and community services grants, is my understanding. Each of the departments contributes $12,000 to it. Do we know any more specifics, or would Mike? And maybe Mike can address it.
Mr. Coop?
Yes, Mike from Finance. Yes, it is part of the overall picture. I don't know the exact amounts that the grant writers are being paid this time. I know it was a contract that was approved by council, so you know, they went through the process, I guess, back around the beginning of the fiscal year, I believe. And it is part of the overall process. I don't have the exact information that you're asking for, what they applied for, and what we've got.
Okay. What I would like to know, then, let me be clear on the record. I'd like to have information provided to all of council at the same time as to the grant writing entity, the total amount being paid on that grant, from what departments and what funds are being contributed to it, and again, what benefit has come to the county since implementation. And if you have it, any background materials on this entity? I appreciate it. Because ironically, when we talk public safety and all, you know, we used to hear quite frequently the grants we got for public safety and all that were processed in-house. We haven't really been hearing them. So I'll go to Councilwoman Kilpatrick, then Councilmember Tackett.
Thank you. That was almost exactly what I was going to ask about the $12,000 increase. But I was then going to ask if at a finance committee hearing we could find out who, not just for this department, but for every department through the county, how many contracts we have signed for grant writing, how much we've paid for each one of those, and how much has come back in from those grant writers. Public Safety did bring one before us a couple of months ago, saying that they wanted some help on something very specific, which we did approve. I don't personally, but my memory's not always the best, but I don't personally remember approving just in general contracts that came before us for grant writing other than that one.
Well, we did have some people come before us the last kind of, at the beginning of this fiscal year, and they actually came and spoke, and they were supposed to be working on grants out of Washington, so we'll see what comes back.
But I would at least like that within the Finance Committee meeting, yeah, okay, and fairly soon prior to the budget vote.
Okay. Councilman Taggart, sorry.
True. And I echo that sentiment too. As much as we could probably get into the Finance Committee meeting, probably be the best, you know, better off we'll be. Just a quick observation. I don't want to dwell too much on the topic, but, you know, as going on my 11 years on this council, this is probably the most I could ever remember us putting out for consultant fees, but being down this many employees. So my major concern is we're getting a lot of information, but are we going to have the staff to process it? So just an observation on it. On the fleet, we had talked in the past about making sure that the employees were in the suitable vehicles. That at one point we had our inspectors just driving around in big pickups, you know, when they could have used something a little bit smaller, a little bit more economical. Has that ever taken place, or is that still happening? Or
the answer, this is Joe Roberto.
Joe Roberto, licensing manager.
We have met with Special Services about 3 or 4 times in the last couple months, and we are getting some smaller, more fuel-efficient pickups, the new Colorados. Part of the reason for that is to have some of the fleet for bad weather, to be able to get out and get at some of the sites that are more difficult. And we have switched, I believe, 2 or 3 of the vehicles to smaller cars. So we are in the process of transferring to some more fuel-efficient vehicles. What I found out is we are bound somewhat. It becomes more more effective, cost effective for special services, depending on the vehicles, so to speak, and the maintenance cost as well. So we're in meeting with them, we're trying to balance both situations rather than having the vehicles. We have some F-250s that make no sense to have because of the fuel efficient and some of the maintenance costs. So we are scaling back, but it doesn't make sense to have a small vehicle driving on sites where the maintenance cost will be even higher. So the Colorados, I think, are a good middle ground.
Wait, Joe, you got to weigh that too. I mean, you know, the inspectors aren't hauling materials; they're just showing up to, you know, perform their inspections and bringing their clipboards and their laptops or whatever and doing their paperwork. So it's
right. Well, and we spoke about that as well, because we were looking at the Escapes, but they were even a little bit more cost than what the pickups were. So the special services felt comfortable with the durability of the four-wheel drive pickup and then transferring the rest of the vehicles and for cars and such.
Councilman Ritter?
Thank you. Joe, in that same line, is this a purchase or is this a lease on these vehicles?
I'm not sure, Joe.
Is that through special services?
Yeah, it's through special services. I'm not 100% sure what they're doing as far as leasing or purchasing. I just look at the cost that we're getting, the cross charge. And for trucks, the cross charge was somewhere around $12,000. The cars were around $5,000, and the Colorados are somewhere in between that. So,
okay. Okay. One more question.
Yeah.
Mike, is there any chance that we can get the council on the difference in price for purchase and lease?
I'd like to finance. Yes, I'll talk with purchasing. And back to that question there, I was going to say I believe all vehicles are leased.
They're all leased?
Well, I shouldn't say all, because I know when I did the vehicle replacement study years ago for Public Safety and that, there was a small vehicle that was going to be purchased. It was depending on the life of the vehicle.
generally, if we had vehicles that were going to end up, I know in police department, in 3 years, I was going, we were purchasing, but the majority we would be leasing. And I would say, as long as these have been around, we're probably leasing, but I'll find out for you.
Yeah, because if I remember right, the police department was doing a lease purchase.
There were
all five. That was a five-year plan, but at the same time, in 3 years, they got rid of some of the vehicles. So we had 2 years left on that contract.
They shouldn't be getting rid of any.
No, that's what they shouldn't have done.
No, they had. There were some in there that were for a three-year turnover, and there were some, and most were for a five-year. And they were getting more than 5 years out of them.
Yeah, that's why I was.
That's why.
So if we can get that information to the council,
mm-hmm. And you're right about the lease purchase. It's really a purchase. It's financing. They just call it a lease purchase.
Okay.
They're financing.
Thanks.
Back to Lance.
So with all of this that we've discussed, the fantastic thing, and a lot of it has been the council support, certainly the county exec support, but the incredible staff. There's been a tremendous amount of progress. I think the biggest issue, and this involves all of you, is that the projects that come through to council just have, we call it better outcomes. They're better projects. They have more benefits. And one of the goals this year will be through development standards to have that apply to a wider range of projects other than just the discretionary. The UDC is well underway. I know several of you were at the meeting 2 weeks ago, which was well attended and a lot of really positive community involvement. We have we call it the quality of life, but the plans, the corridor studies, Route 40, which we're working with WMAPCO on, well underway. And I know Councilman Tackett was at one of those meetings. 141 is underway. 141 will be an interesting planning effort because, of course, the transportation issues will come forward. Greenville, the staff has completed a draft of guidelines for development along the Greenville corridor. Red Clay is underway, moderately priced dwelling unit ordinance adopted, completed. The area plans. Pipe Creek has been initiated, the economic part, now the full land use part, needs to be moved forward. 273, starting July 1, will be underway. North Claymont, the economic portion, will start in a couple of months under economic development. We talk a lot about facilitating job-rich projects. What that turns out to be on, whether it was 8 or 10 projects, the amount of time, this was all where it was very intentionally facilitated, the amount of time per project averaged to 8 months per project saved. So that that effort works. It needs to be spread to a wider range of projects. Site readiness is what program is well underway. The ongoing outreach, and again, the outreach is not just me. A lot of what I do with the community now and the business, civic, environmental, will be done by the staff, by my successor, but it's also structured into the plans and it's structured into the development review with concept review. Streamlining, we talk about project docs. We've talked about that for a long time. It will be fully underway the end of the summer. There have been training and the trial runs. And Reed, what was the amount of time you told me that you thought it would save on resubmittals?
Six months? Reed Macmillan, Department of Land Use. As you know, whenever we have an application, the applicant submits their original site plan, gets to the engineers, planners, they make their comments, and then the applicant submits a resubmittal. Sometimes there are two or three resubmittals. The resubmittal, the amount of time that they will save, that the Newcastle County planners and engineers will save, is 60%, because everything will be electronic. So when they have the original, and then any kind of changes will be seen instantaneously, and that will zero in the planners and engineers right to those changes. So I have a 60% increase in efficiency when it comes to plan review.
We're really delighted about that. Engineering adopted, even despite the shortages, adopted the floodplain ordinance, the FEMA maps, and we've talked about the restructuring and the efficiency, but really, if the areas you're going to see it the most, first is in customer service, but also in the fact that not just is there going to be concurrency of the permitting and code enforcement processes and inspection, but there will be collaboration with the applicant, so that we would hope by next year the process would not only be shorter, but much more of a collaborative rather than a, I won't say combative, but a collaborative process. Permitting, we have a whole list of improvements, real-time inspections, customer served, almost 250,000. So this coming year, Councilman Weiner just asked me about one of the upcoming plans. The goal for all of this effort, I would say, is implementation of what's underway, including some discussions about workforce housing, actual implementation, the implementation of the processes, the plans, but also the economic development. You know, the council has talked for the past almost 2 years since I've been here about balancing jobs and quality of life. It's all very, very doable as you think about these programs and just take them forward. Guiding principles, we have a draft of that for the UDC, and that will come forward next month. And that is the balance of jobs and quality of life, neighborhood conservation districts, placemaking, village centers, all coming forward in the next month. Pike Creek going forward, as I said, 273 and Concord Pike next year. Expanding the scenic byways to gateways all around the county. The quality of projects we've talked a lot about, but I think the development standards will help the by right projects complete 40, complete 141. The transportation demand management strategies, we throw these terms out, but very simply what they're going to mean for the council is we have projects, job-rich projects, that walk away because they do not want to and they cannot take on a year of a TIS. They cannot take on the opportunity, the possibility at the end of that year that they don't get through the process. What you'll have this coming year is not an we have to give away the store to jobs or we have to save the community. You have lots of options with these transportation demand management strategies. There can be discussions about if someone has 1,000 jobs, maybe you want to be looking at that in a different light than if you're getting a strip commercial center or more of the same, nothing against Wawa's, but we'll use Wawa's and Royal Farms. There are some trade-offs to be made, and that's the discussion. This is not something that is that can be done at the expense of one part of the community versus another. This is going to be your big discussion this coming year. What are the trade-offs? What are some of the uses the council doesn't care and the community doesn't care about? Maybe we shouldn't be letting capacity used up on those. Maybe our commercial districts are too intense in favor of possibly jobs. So that's the big discussion for the council. And of course, the revitalization of Route 9, we get a grant from WMAPCO starting this summer. We're looking at the aging malls, that would be 273 and Tri-State. The economic development districts, we have rough drafts of that, and that will be a matter of coming to consensus. The meat of it is fairly straightforward. It'll be a matter of coming to consensus on those districts. The streamlining we've discussed in great detail, and then the UDC next year where you'll have actually the districts. We've talked about the teams for customer relations. For code, we are looking at, and it's really exciting, putting together not just teams for occasional sweeps, but doing teams with police, ongoing sweeps. I wish Councilman Cartier was here, because that is the effort that will be underway. And then, so request for improvements, $250,000. Of that, $142,000 will go to the UDC, and that'll be zoning districts, the TDMs, the revitalization districts, and all the technical processes, outreach, brochures, visualization models, so people can see. Having all these words in the code, you know, people don't know, have any sense of what it means in their real life. There need to be graphics, visualization, so people understand what scale and mass and these things mean in the English language. The corridors, there will be more money from Pipe Creek, Route 273, again, a grant for Route 9, a little bit of money for North Claymont and Comfort Pike. That brings us to challenges. I'm going too fast. Challenges are on page 1-2. And the challenges, I think we've talked about the biggest challenge, which is getting the vacancies filled. And if you look at page 52, page 52 shows you a chart of the restructured positions. Several of these have been filled. Some of them have not yet been filled. What will be coming before you are the two positions in blue, which are new position titles, senior financial officer, development facilitator. The bottom line is there's no impact on salaries. Some other positions were deleted. So all of the restructuring will not cost the council any more money, or cost the county any more money. I think the other challenge is in losing institutional knowledge. We are bringing in just the best and the brightest, but we are losing institutional knowledge with the retirement. Property maintenance revolving fund, I think you know this issue, and I think council is addressing it. We bring in about $860,000 in the fund. It cost about $428,000 to run, and we get budgeted about $200,000. So as a result, you know, we come back to council every year for increases.
Since we're on this, the property maintenance revolving fund, the fines and everything that was collected, where does that go? Does it go to the general fund? Is it split?
General fund.
I'm asking now because, and again, I'm running a little late because of my being here last week, but I see legislation coming to take $300,000 out of the reserve account to fill this. And my question has to be, if the revenue has exceeded the expenditure and that additional revenue went into the general fund, why is that money not coming back out of the general fund into the revolving fund instead of us going to the reserves? I guess that'll be a question for when that legislation comes up, but I'll throw it out there now. It's the same thing we just went through with risk management. If a department has revenue coming in that's exceeding expectations, then those funds should be being used, in my mind, for that process. We shouldn't be putting that money in the general fund, moving it from this area to spend it somewhere else, and then going to the reserves. That makes it makes it appear as if that fund is not self-sufficient, when in fact it's exceeding expectations.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you. Those are the challenges. The vacancies on page 23. Several of these have been filled. I think we've discussed that at great length, but I do want our new licensing manager, Joey Roberto, to stand up. That has been filled. our assistant land use manager, Reed McMillan, to stand up, and Michelle Davis, stand up as land use administrator. And like I said, we have another position which we hope to be upgraded within the next couple weeks, and we'll share that with council as soon as that happens. Thank you, guys. My joy on that. The graphs, if you, unless anyone has any questions on the detail of contractual services, the bottom line is it's decreased by 150,000. There are increases in the couple of funds we've already discussed. Council doesn't have more questions on that. We can go to the performance standards, which are on page 31. The first graph is on page 31, development activity. What it is is fees, the relationship to the cost of direct cost for a development review and the revenue. Without the fee increase, that relationship is 92%. 92% of our direct costs are funded by the revenue. With the fee increase, it will be 101%. I've talked at length to our staff about that, because I said 101 is 1% over 100, but the belief is that that will, with the level of positions that come in, that will dip just below 100, so that it won't be 101. The next page we discussed, page 32, and again, that revenue per staff and number of staff that we are down in comparison to 2012, that has improved greatly, meaning lower revenue to staff with the recent hires. Page 33, the short version here is that on the recorded plans and what's in the pipeline, there's a lot in the pipeline. The non-residential, we've got apartments, mixed use, commercial. We've got a few million square feet in the pipeline. And if you look at page 34, well, 34 deals with the time. 34 shows you that there has been a decrease overall. This is the blue line. This is where we get into the roughly the 8-month decrease in review time, and that's primarily for the major projects. Page 35, Councilman Bell, you're the winner. Development activity. 36 addresses the what we've talked about with engineering because of their staff staffing shortages. There was quite an increase in the workload. Again, we have just hired two of the youngest looking people I've seen. I think that has to do with my age. I look at these guys, I think, oh my God, how old are they? But they're engineers.
You can't see this end of the table?
page 37. Building activity. These are right. I can barely see it. These are the permits. They're up slightly, and we continue to project a slight increase. Residential, it comes in the form of, and that's on page 38. It will come in the form of townhouses, some singles, and apartments. And then, of course, the commercial is in a whole variety of projects. So 38, what we don't have in here is the projection for 2015, where it is a slight increase in towns and apartments particularly. And then 39 is an interesting one. 39 shows you the increase projected for 2016 budget year, 2015 actual year. We've got apartments in the top on the blue. In the green, we also had J.P. Morgan Chase build out, DuPont Research, Chestnut Run. You've got the Fashion Center, the government, Lowe's Government Square. Those are some of the projects that are increasing the, this is not the plans, but this is the permitting activity increase. Then on page 41, what you see is a slight reduction in the amount of time to receive a respond to a first request. Again, inspections has been down, ranging from 2 to 3 inspectors. They've had an increase in the number of expired permits that's significant. And what that means is instead of an expired permit just being processed normally, the applicant lets it expire, so the staff has to go into a proactive mode of contacting the applicant, and they've had 1,000 more inspections. We would expect that number, with the staff getting filled in the next few months, to improve.
Just on that 1,000 inspections you're talking about, we finding that there's a significant amount of those to where the contractor just didn't get the final inspection and close it out, and now the homeowners.
Yeah, Joe Roberto, licensing manager. That's pretty much it, Councilman. It's they're letting it go for that extended period of time for whatever reason. And prior to that, we have a pretty extensive process in notifying them, and for what they're just letting them go. Now, what we have done in the with the new code is to take that number. We allow them to have 10 expires, because some folks take out so many permits, it's hard for them to manage.
Right.
We cut that number down to 5, so we expect it to knock down drastically.
They've got 5 expired permits. They're not pulling another permit.
They're not going to get another one.
Appreciate it.
Page 42 is some of the reflects the good work that code enforcement is doing. And again, the excitement here is we've got more management staff in there. We actually, right now, are upgrading one of the positions, which will further help. And we've got the teams to do the proactive, but to do the sweeps. So that's all good news. The fees are on page 44. The short version of the fees is that there has not been an increase since 2009, July 1. If we did a CPI, in other words, each year increased the fees with the consumer price index, we'd be looking about $1 million more in revenue next year. We are not, the fee study does not recommend that. It recommends less revenue, about $461,000 in fee increases. A 15% increase for planning and engineering fees, and a 5% increase for building permit fees. On page 47, you will see the increase anticipated for the fees is $461,000, and volume almost $229,000. So the total increase would be $690,000 in budget to budget in revenues. And then in the fee study, and I'd be glad to answer any questions about the fee study. I should probably go to the fee study and I'll go back to the others. The fee study, which is in the very back, the last document, there have been a lot of, when you do a fee study or a fee increase, you should always have corresponding improvements in service. And on page 3 of the fee study, you'll see the fast tracking project docs alone being put in place is just going to be a huge improvement. Reed said saving 60% on the resubmissions. With the restructuring, and we call it the efficiency of the process, really you're looking at clarity, you're looking at coordination with applicants, looking at less bites of the apple. All of that has been underway, but now is underway in with the structure in place. And so the process improvements are going to be very measurable. They're measurable now. They will be measurable. We're moving from, and we've made a lot of progress already, from a linear decision-making process where things, you know, like a tennis match, back and forth, not only to concurrent. We've pretty much gotten there on that. But now to try and establish more of a collaborative process where there's both education and working with the applicants. Comparison to other jurisdictions with similar size and where they've raised the fees in the last 5 years, we are lower. Many jurisdictions have no recent fee studies. As our budget goes forward, the fee study is a part of it, and the increases are a part of it. So council will be, if you adopt the budget, you will have to take actual action on the fee study.
One of the things I wanted to clarify is that when we adopt the budget, we adopt those fee schedules, because as I recall, 2009, after we adopted that, we were actually challenged on that basis. That we had not adopted, that we hadn't voted the fees because they had not come before us individually, separately, and that is not on the record. That is not required. That is part of the budget. So thank you for helping bring that forward.
Thank you,
Captain Taggart.
I know you're trying to get through the budget presentation and what's going right along here, but page 43, you've got listed, and you show the county. 8,276 cases in 2014. How does that relate back to the previous page that we went over in 42, which...
It's this one, it's the map.
Yeah.
Code enforcement page. He's on page 43 with the map that says 8,276 cases.
Versus 42.
Why does the numbers not...
Well, I'm just asking, you got cases there of only, 8,200, but when we flip back to 42, and you're talking about the number of inspections per officer, and you have 12, and you're saying here that, you've had... now I know the cases take multiple inspections, and we've seen that, and that's been a frustration I know in our offices that we have with you about the multiple inspections that are occurring to try to get the case resolved. But it's 8,200 cases resulted in almost 32,000 inspections. No, I just wanted to make sure I understood, the length of time that, it's taking you to get a case solved.
Right, but now we're reporting on, but it is about the same number every year. It's about 8,000 to 9,000 cases. But the one graph showing you the new cases, the other one showing us all our inspections, but it does take multiple inspections because many cases the individual doesn't comply right away. So then we're out there to prepare for court, we're out there to issue tickets, we're out there to post notices for pre-deprivation hearings, then we're out there to see that the abatements occur, the follow-up. So even rather than just going out and seeing the same problem repeatedly, we have to go out for each step of the process as well to prepare for the next stage, whether it be a court hearing, an abatement hearing, The actual abatement itself, because we go out with the vendors now to make sure that we document what's being taken so we can fend off any accusations that we've improperly taken something that we didn't give notice on. And then some cases are just very problematic where we have to go out multiple times because something will be reported to us. We'll go out there and it's not occurring when we get out there, so then we have to do it again, sometimes on the weekends or after hours, and it might take multiple opportunities. And on a recent case, we put in about 50 inspections on one particular case because we were trying to verify whether this particular problem really was occurring that we were getting complaints about after hours. So
sometimes the pig's not home.
That's great.
And I know I've had discussions with you for the last several years. There's only, 10 whatever items that you're actually out there ticketing for. The rest of them you can't issue tickets for even after the proper notice.
That's,
you know,
correct.
And I've asked you about, like, you know, EVMSs, things like that, things that you're going out for repeatedly violations on that they're not concurring with the law on, about you looking into the possibility, feasibility of bringing back, you know, increasing them.
We're actually adding it to our drafts for the new codes that we'd be able to ticket for anything in the code. So we would actually give notice, and regardless of what would be in our code, we'd be able to go out and ticket them.
When's that? You mean the new UDC for the revamping of the UDC?
As we do through all of our codes, we're going to start with the Chapter 7 Property Maintenance Code. Currently, those 10 violations are all in the Property Maintenance Code. So we're going to expand that, or at least we're going to propose to get that expanded to all of Chapter 7, and then as the new UDC rewrite, the input we're going to give is that we ought to be able to do that as well for signage and illegal businesses and some of the more problematic inspections cases.
Well, if you've got 8,200 cases and you're doing 32,000 inspections,
now,
something is...
What you will find out, if you were to go back and look at the past budgets, you'll see that our inspections have actually come down. We're doing more per officer, but they've come down. And the purpose for that, or the reason for that, is because about 2 years ago, we resorted to abating much quicker. The complaint was, that's great if you're going out, you're ticketing a lot, you're generating some revenue, you're taking the court, but the problem is still there. So rather than run up very large fines on individuals that still have the problems plagued the community, we've become a lot more aggressive with using our property maintenance revolving fund and those funds available to us to go out and actually abate the problems, which is cheaper in the long run for the individual, but it also cures the problem right away. So we don't typically do now more than 3 inspections before we're already abating the problem.
And how many supervisors do you have in your department? I think Ms. Fogarty just mentioned you have more.
Well, we currently have the licensing division manager is now partially overseeing code enforcement as well. So we have...
So it's you, Al, and Joe?
And Joe Day and Joe Roberto.
So there's 4 of you.
It'll be 3 inside code enforcement and 1 manager who is across between multiple areas. Joe Roberto.
Grant Porter.
Joe Roberto.
So you, Joe Day, and Al are the 3, and Joe...
That are full-time code, and I mean, I have other things too, but then Joey will spend a lot of time with code as well as building inspections, permitting, those 3 things.
And you're down how many positions?
4.
I think 1.
We're down 6 positions right now, 1 which is unfunded. Oh, I'm sorry. 1 was just filled today.
So
we're down 5 positions.
Oh. Jasper Warner?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Councilman Tacker, for asking most of my questions that I wanted to ask. I just had 1 question left, and that's concerning the hometown overlay zones and the DRACs, staffing them. How are we doing? Where are we from where we were when you first came in?
So when I first came here, we went to, through retirements, we went to a place that we all, council, and we have just discussed, where we were looking at almost a 50% vacancy in planning. So during that time, we were not really able to do any justice to the drafts. We're in a place now where we are able to have staff go out and work directly with the drafts. Anthony, do you want to add anything on that?
No, and as Sandy had indicated, we have two new planner ones that were recently hired, and two planner leads, one by Janet and Marco. So with them being on board now, kind of an acclimated or for, you know, the local job responsibilities, trying some staffing, but ready to have a consistent person, hopefully, showing up for the individual meetings.
So, if I may continue on this line. Initially, we had two planners going to all the meetings, and then we went to one planner, and we were actually zero planners, and Jim Smith was doing it. And during that whole process, we went from staffing all the meetings to some of the meetings where something significant was going to come up. Are we back to staffing all the DRACs for all of the meetings, or exactly where
I
are we?
I don't think we still have a couple positions.
And I'm not saying that's needed, but.
Yeah, we still have a couple positions that need to be filled. We're definitely back to staffing the important and major meetings.
Okay.
That we can, you can commit to, and then you can ask these guys in 2 months.
Okay.
Men and women.
And when we define an important meeting, does that mean there's a application that will need the guidance of the land use department because it's going to be coming up with a recommendation to the land use department or something less or more? What's important mean?
Council person asking for it.
I hope that's not the criteria.
That would make it a very important meeting.
Yeah.
Currently, I go to the meetings where there's something that has to be acted on by the director. If there isn't any official business, then there's no currently not a department representative.
Okay. I think that answered my question. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Great.
So, Chair and Council, thank you very much. The sad part is we're in really good shape, but that's the good news for you. You have an incredible staff and you have a management structure in place now. There are some more positions to be filled, but we have been blessed not only with our staff we've had that we've moved into positions, but also with the new staff that we've brought on. I mean, we've just gotten great people. You have a lot of your, I say goals and objectives, but a lot of the things that are important to all of you. There's been good progress on them, but now, this coming year, we really have an opportunity to see them move forward, and particularly the UDC. We have great consultants, we have community excitement, and that'll be a big challenge. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. General Manager Ferdy, your work in getting us to this point has been excellent. And of course, you've got a great team and you're brought on great people. And it takes time to bring on great people and to bring on the potential of the staff that you have and bring them to their fullest potential. So kudos to you.
Thanks.
I just hope that your replacing yourself takes a long time, because it's nice having you here.
Thanks. So it's been a pleasure in working with all of you. And we said this last month, but this has been a highlight. And you all know that's true, coming to meet with council. And it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any questions from any other members of council?
I'll just echo, you know, what we heard early on from the chair and council members, that but we are going to be looking for updates on these positions. You've heard shared the sentiment that we're extremely concerned over so many vacant positions over there, you know, in your budget and you know, moving forward with that. So please, you know, whoever, you've got the whole staff here, so please periodically give us updates on those positions, where we're at with them, and make sure, you know, we're updated moving forward, because, you know, it's a big concern we have. You know, I mean, I know I've sent over some suggestions to you where I've had some constituents who were upset over, like, a process of the Board of Adjustment and all, and we tried to work on that. I sent you a couple of emails, but you didn't respond, but I know you're busy, you know. But I don't want things like that to land on the back burner, because there were a lot of great suggestions came out of it. We formed a little quasi-working group, and we really need to get things like that moving and not let them get cold.
I think what's the good news is the positions that were released for us at some point in the fall, we have filled just about all of them, and that's been a major effort. And that, like I said, Friday afternoon, several other positions have been released. And so the release of those positions, there'll be the same kind of effort to get them filled.
I'm going to go to Councilman Red. I just want to say, you know, it's probably, I'm sure in the realm of things, for the internal workings of government, seems insignificant. But in all the things I've done in life, I always try to keep a perspective of what's coming from those I've had to serve. Mm-hmm. So I periodically do things, as I'm sure other council members do, that are out of the norm. So when I call 5555, which is part of what land use is charged with handling, and now every phone has a counter on it, and I'm four and a half minutes waiting for an answer. I mean, don't worry, I'm not complaining when they pick up, but that tells me there's an issue, and if I'm getting it, the volume of calls that are coming in that I see here, you know, it's, then the public's got a bad taste before they ever get to the unfortunate
and
county employee that has to answer
that phone.
So it may seem insignificant, but it's that important pipeline. It's that first contact that sets the tone of how the rest of that conversation will go, or they're making that appointment to come in, because they get that appointment and they're already frustrated because they've had that. So I look at that as a crucial element to the operation of
It's not insignificant. It's absolutely, like I said, it sets people's entire attitude.
I keep a bad one, so it doesn't bother me.
We were down the several of the positions we hired. We hired temporary people so that we could at least get to the phones. And now it's my understanding, how many of the positions for the secretary and the other have been filled too?
Two.
Yeah, so we have two filled, and I think, but that is a very simple case of vacant positions. Simple as that.
Well, we had temporary people up till recently.
We had temporary people up until this time.
Still have a handful that are gonna.
Like, I knew there was something different when the person answered the phone, and I said, "Can you connect me with?" And then when they came back and gave me the number, they said. And I don't keep that information handy, so why don't you write the number down and you can call direct later? That's exactly what I was told. I said, okay, I'm driving down the road, I'm on my Bluetooth, let me stop and write it down. But so I knew it wasn't a permanent employee that was handling that.
Well, they know your number, they probably bounce around. That's smelly. You get it.
Councilman Retta.
Councilman, they did.
I'm sorry.
They did answer your phone quicker, though.
Thank you.
Just wouldn't transfer
you. You know, Eileen, I like what you did on some of the repositions, personnel, which I think is really going to make an impact for the better. And just for the past 18 months or so, thank you.
Thanks.
And
it'll be 22 months by the time I get out of here. 22
months. Any
more
questions from council? Any Republican? Well,
time to get out here.
You have 41 more minutes if you'd like to talk to us.
I'm good. Thanks.
Is there anything under, I don't know why we put this on here, but I guess we have to. Is there anything under other?
Motion.
Any public comment? Is there a motion?
Ditto.
Got a motion to adjourn? Have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Mr. Coop, we look forward to your communication.